Good morning again, dear friends. So just to review, some of you may not know that we're kind of in the middle of a process of training ourselves on the Bodhisattva path this year. We began in January with the question, how can I help? And how can I help is our theme for the year. And that is really the question of a bodhisattva, because a bodhisattva is a being who awakens and commits to staying here and helping until everyone is free from suffering. So it's a big aspiration. And so we, each quarter, we introduce ourselves and invite in another bodhisattva to get to know and to practice with and to be our mentor and guide for that three-month period. We started in January with Manjushri, who's the bodhisattva of great understanding. And then in April, we invited Avalokiteshvara, the bodhisattva of great compassion, to come. So we've been, those of us on this practice path have been working for almost 6 months now with these two bodhisattvas. And in July, there'll be a third bodhisattva, and in October, a fourth. So by the end of this year, we'll get to know quite well four wonderful, great bodhisattvas that we'll have to be our friends and our guides for the future. So this is kind of in the middle. And so what I thought we'd talk about today is, well, what the heck is a bodhisattva? What are the qualities of a bodhisattva? You know, are we sure we want to be on this path? And if so, how do we do it? So there's some very, you know, one of the things that I love about the Dharma teachings is that they're very practical step-by-step guidelines for, you know, it's not just like, okay, let's magically become awakened. You know, we have all kinds of practices and keys and clues to find our way as we develop slowly in our path of awakening. So this talk is, I titled it, Lotuses Returning to the Mountain, Coming Home to the Beauty of Our True Nature. So we'll see what happens when we do this one. So first I want to welcome all of you, your bodhisattvas in training, just by being here. Just by being here in this room together, we've already accomplished everything. So you can let your shoulders down. A gift, one of the gifts of the past few years of needing to stay isolated is that now we can fully appreciate and enjoy the delight in being here together. Take a moment to look around again and offer a smile to each person here. We can see their whole face. You might be feeling, I'm so happy to see you, just as you are. In this moment, I don't need you to be any different. This is a gift we can give each other, and it's sometimes challenging to give to ourselves. Can you accept and appreciate every single thing about yourself? We're so trained in judging and criticizing and in trying to improve ourselves that we often aren't skilled in loving and accepting who we are, just as we are. Thay tells us over and over that joy and suffering are not separate. They're made from the same elements. The suffering of isolation has given birth to the joy of being together. So we're here to celebrate ourselves in all our accomplishments and our failings, in our growth and mastery, and losing our health and our skills and our memories. Knowing that the needs of one person allows another person the joy of helping. We're in this together, and every element is part of the precious whole. So today we come together as bodhisattvas, allowing our true nature to shine. We remind ourselves what our life is for and how we're supported and loved by the universe itself. In April, I told the story of the Buddha teaching the Lotus Sutra on Vulture Peak, and how many, many Buddhas and Bodhisattvas from other cosmic realms appeared in the form of large, beautiful lotus blossoms. In our song, Breathing In, Breathing Out, there's a line, I am blooming like a flower. Let's just stop for a moment and see ourselves as beautiful lotus blossoms floating in a calm pool of water. This is our true nature. Let this image penetrate all the cells of your body. This image is a resource for you and will be there when you're in pain, when you're confused or doubting your strength and resilience. We know that the lotus can only blossom when there's enough mud to nourish it. Our hardships and difficulties are that mud. They provide the nourishment for our beauty and freshness to manifest. When we review our lives, we see that our difficulties have created the path for joy. So today we want to continue our exploration of the Bodhisattva path, of how to train to let our true nature shine more brightly. It's pretty obvious how much our world needs us to do this work. We've been called to it and given abundant resources, so we have no excuse, no option but to walk this path of love together. In the First Noble Truth, the Buddha revealed the truth of the pervasive suffering of daily life. This suffering remains as long as we are self-referencing, as long as we see life through the eyes of ego, of a separate self. Our path today is to let go of that illusion of separation, to experience and act from our true nature of interbeing. The only way I know to do this is to fall in love. So that is our mission today, to allow ourselves to fall in love with all of it, whatever arises, whatever disappears, to become that love. So this sounds great, perhaps profound and very sweet, but how do we do it? When our knee pain is yelling at us, when that argument we had with someone last week is playing over and over in our head, when that concern for a loved one won't let us alone. Fortunately, we have so many tools to train ourselves. From our daily practice, we know how to return to our breath and to maintain our focus there. We know how to invite in our suffering without being overwhelmed by it. We get in touch with the sensations in our body that call to us and listen as they deliver messages of insight. We notice how everything is in a continual flow of change, and that all sensations, feelings, and thoughts contain the seeds of their opposites. In this way, we learn that we don't have to deny or suppress anything to manifest our highest selves, that our true beauty lies in offering up all of us to this moment. In my advanced years, I can't help but be disappointed sometimes that I haven't mastered my shortcomings, that I haven't transformed into the perfect me of my imagination. And yet, I've also learned that this image of myself is only two-dimensional, and that she may present a shining image, but doesn't have the depth of a true human being. My failings are what open my heart and connect me with others. Something we need to remember here before we start aspiring to the lofty heights of bodhisattvahood: the nature of a human being is to fail, is to be imperfect, is to be a work in progress. None of us is here to be a model of perfection for others. But hopefully, we're paying attention enough to notice the sparkle of our true beauty and to let our excitement about that possibility grow within us. Your true beauty manifests in a different, unique way from anyone else's, as does mine. Pema Chodron says it this way: the inconceivable wish to help all sentient beings always begins with oneself. Our own experience is the only thing we have to share. Other than that, we can't pretend to be more awake or more compassionate than we actually are. Much of our realization comes from the honest recognition of our foibles. The inability to measure up to our own standards is decidedly humbling. It allows us to empathize with other people's difficulties and mistakes. So how can we encourage this true nature to come forth? Well, first we have to know what it looks like. So this is what we'll do today: call on the teachings of our wise elders to explore the characteristics of a bodhisattva and to find the seeds of those qualities in ourselves. Then we use our focused intention to bring forth our motivation, our deepest desire. And we use this focused intention to make conscious choices every day. It's been said by scientists who study this sort of thing that each of us makes approximately 35,000 conscious choices every day. When we align those choices to our deeper purpose, we navigate our way into becoming our true selves. Making conscious choices as our true selves is freedom. This kind of freedom generates creativity, joy, and love. So close your eyes for a moment and connect with your breath and listen to the voice of our ancestors who say, "O wise ones, remember the pure open sky of your own true nature. Return to it. Trust it. It is home." So from this place, we choose how to live. We know that as human beings, we have what might be a unique trait of our species, our metacognition, that is, our ability to be aware of our awareness, to be conscious of where we're putting our attention. This ability means that we can expand our awareness beyond our conditioned minds, beyond the box created by all our cultural and social conditioning that has told us who we are and what is real. We can be aware that a social construct is an idea that may help us to function together, like the idea of time, for example. We can learn to use these constructs without identifying with them, without letting them limit us. The Buddha tells us that the most harmful of these constructs is the belief that we're separate. Deepak Chopra says, "The worst use of the imagination is stress over the false sense of separation." So the antidote is waking up to the reality of interbeing, that we are not just connected, but are all of the same piece, that we are all cells in the Sangha body. Thay explains that when the right hand accidentally hits the left hand with a hammer instead of the nail it was holding, the left doesn't start blaming the right. Instead, the right hand holds and soothes the left. This is the natural response. We need to expand that natural response to the body of our whole community, to our solar system and beyond. How do we do this? Through right view, through clearly understanding our true nature. What follows is the natural, loving, caring response, empathy, compassion, and healing. When our priority is love, and our understanding is that we're all one, this is our response to life. And we become a healing force. So our ancestral teachers have looked carefully at the actions of a bodhisattva, which are the qualities that result from their awakened nature. They're called the paramitas. And they're the description, the guidelines on how to follow the bodhisattvas in creating an awakened life. They flow from the ultimate dimension into our world of the relative. And with the creativity that manifests from our blossoming wisdom and compassion, we craft a life of freedom and wonder. The paramitas can be called a kind of bridge across which the bodhisattvas walk into our world of duality, carrying their superpowers as gifts. We make the most of this precious life we have been given by recognizing and developing these gifts in ourselves. So these are the qualities that flow from awakening. Hydration. The first is generosity. Generosity comes from the understanding that there is enough, that we have enough, and that we are enough, that there isn't a limit on goodness. For example, that the more love you give, the more love you experience. It's based on the understanding that life is flow, that everything is changing, moving, increasing and decreasing. The Buddha said that when you understand the power of generosity, you wouldn't eat a single meal without offering some of it to another. The times I was able to watch Thai eat, he would frequently select a piece of food with his chopsticks and place it in the bowl of someone he was eating with. Sharing makes a meal so much sweeter. My experience is that gratitude is the greatest fuel for developing a generous heart. When we remember to touch on all that we have been given, beginning with the breath that keeps us alive, we learn to accept and receive. In the evolutionary attempt to turn the wheel of our ship from resistance and aversion to acceptance and delight, this is one of the powers we use. Choosing to focus on gratitude puts us in the lane of creativity, open to new possibilities. Brain scientists are encouraging elders to spend time with nostalgic memories, recalling wonderful times in their lives. When I do this, gratitude is what comes up in me, filling me with humility for all I've been given. I heard a story of a young man who couldn't seem to touch this understanding. As little children, he and his sister knew no father, and their drug-addicted mother abandoned them on a street. Eventually, they were adopted by a wonderful family, but this boy had been so broken by his earlier experiences that he had no skills of empathy, of seeing or understanding the needs of another. His adopted mom explained that they sat for hours one day while she asked him what he might be willing to do to help someone else out. After rejecting about 200 of her suggestions, finally she said to him, "Would you be able to open a door for someone one time?" And he thought he could do that. So he went to his high school and he opened the door for someone. And his life changed in that moment. He learned the secret, the joy you feel when you help someone. the joy of being used for the good, of having purpose. He had never experienced that simple connection before. He kept opening the door for the next student and the next, and then he went to church and opened the door for the whole congregation. He became a helper. This is the power of generosity. Giving fills us with the joy of abundance and connection, which necessitates that we share it. It is the same as love. The more you give, the more it fills you. You are the giver, and you are the receiver, and you are that which is given. I seem to be dripping here today. So the second quality of a bodhisattva is patience. Patience is a really good teacher for me, as my basic nature is one of impatience. It's that graspy for more attitude that comes from enthusiasm but doesn't have great boundaries. So our core teaching of stopping is a life practice for me, and patience delivers this message powerfully. Recently, I learned a phrase that is now my practice for developing patience. Stay as long as you'd like. Whatever comes, especially what I consider unpleasant, my job is to relax and invite it to stay as long as it likes. This can be a potent exercise when dealing with body pain or some story of woe that keeps returning. And when impatience arises, we get to learn to love it too, to accept our state of unrest, of pushing for and turning away from. Our aspiration is equanimity, and part of that is to accept our shortcomings, our shadow. So we learn to love and include impatience as part of what is. As Thay says, when you make a place at your table for impatience, when you invite it to tea and listen with an open and curious heart, you will learn to love it. Thay prefers to name this quality of patience inclusiveness, which to me is equanimity, making room for everything and everyone, and inviting it to stay as long as it likes. In this way, the power to receive, embrace, and transform happens without effort. Dharma teacher Larry Ward says, equanimity means profound stability, like trees planted by the water that shall not be moved. That's the fierce equanimity that comes from an open heart, open mind, and a clear direction of our energy toward changing the direct trajectory of history. This is the work of evolution, when we can turn towards the suffering instead of away from it and make space for all of it. The third quality of a bodhisattva is wisdom or understanding. Thay tells us, when you truly understand someone, you can't help but love them. Or even more simply, understanding is love. When we clearly see the true nature of everything, love is the only possible outcome. For me, all the other qualities come out of the Bodhisattva Manjushri's teachings, for when you see clearly and are grounded in reality, the magnificence of it all is awesome. When you look closely, there is love everywhere. And it's not only esoteric, it's in the miracle of our being human. There's a scientist named Dr. Keltner who's done extensive research on the human experience of awe and wonder, how it's experienced by us humans and where we most often feel awe. I was reading his book. He has a book called Awe. And I was guessing that people feel awe and wonder most frequently in nature. But his survey, he did a big survey, and it showed something different. This is how he describes the results of his survey. around the world, so this is multicultural. We are most likely to feel awe when moved by moral beauty, by other people's courage, kindness, strength, or overcoming. Exceptional virtue, character, and ability, moral beauty, operate according to a different aesthetic, one marked by a purity and goodness of intention and action, and moves us to awe. So we're moved most deeply by one another. And more insight on this multifaceted jewel called wisdom or understanding comes from scientific research on paths to becoming wiser. More than just hoping life will turn you into someone who's wise, we can actively cultivate the traits of a wise person. A neuropsychiatrist named Dilip Jest has been studying wisdom in seniors for many years. He created a simple 24-question survey to determine a person's level of wisdom based on 7 categories. So the categories of wisdom, according to Dr. Jest, are acceptance of divergent perspectives. Ouch. Decisiveness. Emotional regulation, compassion, empathy, self-reflection, social advising, and spirituality. My personal experience in taking the survey was enlightening. Of the 7 categories, I did less well in the 2 categories I already see myself as needing to work on. And one result was just a pure gift, which humbled me and made me feel deeply grateful. So I have the link to this survey if you'd like to take it. The 4th quality of a bodhisattva is meditation. Mindfulness, concentration, and insight are the 3 aspects of meditation described by our teacher. We start with stopping. And when we have truly learned to stop, the other aspects will naturally follow. Sometimes in meditation, we're inspired to practice loving kindness or to dialogue with our bodies and to develop our focus and to train our minds. All these are wonderful skills, and I believe they're important aspects of meditation. But Thay reminds us, meditation is rest. When we can sit or walk with the stillness of an open, carefree heart, our meditation is successful. The world needs us to be able to stop the momentum of our thoughts and feelings. This is a crucial medicine for our time. With all the distractions of the world surrounding us and wanting to invade our space, it can take all our courage and resilience not to engage. Sometimes the most engaged practice is to stop, to calm, to rest, and to heal ourselves. We come back renewed and refreshed, our stability firm and anchored in the truth and beauty of the moment. In this way, we learn to be truly responsive to life on its own terms. So the 5th quality that flows from a bodhisattva is diligence. I like to borrow the Tibetans' name for this, which is joyful effort. It includes the lightness as well as the energy of this quality. There have been enough times in my life that my energy, my life force has waned, sometimes from exhaustion, but mostly from illness. Recently, I spent about 6 months without this feeling, the energy and the life force. And when this happens, there's nothing more precious to me than feeling energy again, than having the ability to make effort and to take action. And as I age, I'm discovering that this energy isn't limitless. that slowing down and resting is crucial. Because my energy is not limitless, I need to use it wisely, where it will do the most good for me and for everyone. The Buddha reminds us that we have the choice where to put our energy. And when we're able to put our energy into what's wholesome and to refrain from putting it into what's unwholesome, our bodhicitta, our heart mind of love, will grow. When we learn to recognize how much of our energy is spent on thoughts, speech, and behavior that doesn't develop our true nature, then we can catch ourselves and redirect our attention to the wholesome. This is how we train ourselves to stay on the bodhisattva path. This quality of diligence, of joyful effort, of using our life force wisely, is the foundation of gratitude for our very life, for our next breath. We see how these qualities inter-are, how one feeds another, which feeds another. So the sixth quality that arises from our bodhisattva nature is ethical precepts or the mindfulness trainings, living an ethical life. The mindfulness trainings are a map to help us on our journey. These trainings have been determined by our wise elders as the straightest path to waking up from the illusion of our separateness. As humans, sometimes some of us need to try our own way, to test and use our creativity as we move along this path. It's a wonderful way to make art with your life, to see just how much joy you can experience, how much ease and beauty and love can infuse you. Like with the Dr. Keltner story of moral beauty being our most frequent way of experiencing awe, living beautifully means aspiring and practicing what the five mindfulness trainings suggest: kindness, generosity, intimacy, honesty, and clarity. Those qualities are named by a teacher, Kevin Griffin, in his book called Living Kindness. If we make our vow, our deep, sincere intention, to live a life of kindness, generosity, intimacy, which to me means showing up, honesty and clarity, what might happen? What will we look like when this joyful way of living becomes a moment-by-moment choice? I know that I still have quite a ways to go. As I practice each day to embody these qualities more fully, to let go of unnecessary thoughts and behavior that use up my energy, and instead to go through my day with ease and joy. More than anything, I'm grateful that I wake up each day and have the opportunity to practice joy for one more day. I know that one day I won't wake up. So with this bodhisattva method, we have a path and we have a purpose. As humans, we need to have purpose to feel complete, to feel whole. I have a good friend who had a sister named Mary who had Down syndrome. I met Mary a few times, a very happy and extroverted woman. As an adult, Mary lived in a group home and loved it there. In this center, they all had jobs, and Mary's was to collate papers in the office. My friend told me that whenever Mary would meet someone new, she'd introduce herself saying, "Hi, I'm Mary. I collate." The joy of having a purpose. Having the purpose of living a life of kindness, generosity, intimacy, honesty, and clarity brings joy and gives us a sense of belonging in the world. So there's a Dharma teacher named Lynn Jensen that speaks of the precepts this way. For the Zen Buddhist, an ethical precept is a question to be held up to the light of circumstance, an inquiry rather than an answer. And the nature of this inquiry is not so much the dubious enterprise of trying to figure out the right thing to do, as it is an offering of an unaided heart. After all, it's from the heart of this heart of ours that the precepts themselves once arose. At the threshold of choice, the Zen Buddhists trust this ancient heart above all other authority. It's not that the Zen Buddhist reinvents the ethical wheel every time he faces a new situation. It's just that he goes back to the source itself. Ethics is not an invention, but an expression of the heart's core. What's most needed in the moment of choice is an empty hand. So Jensen describes the trainings as a living dharma, not divisible into categories of right and wrong. And he goes on to say, we can know things most directly when we lay no claim to knowing anything at all. The Zen Buddhist does not ask what's right and wrong, but rather, what am I to do in this moment? She has no opinion to put forth. She has learned not to acquire answers, and so holds her question open wherever she goes. This is what we call beginner's mind. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said in his 1957 speech in Montgomery, Alabama, life's most persistent and urgent question is, what are you doing for others? So how does a bodhisattva respond to this question? There's so much uncertainty, chaos, and suffering in the world. How can we take wise action? How can our little drop of intention make any difference? The secret is that the bodhisattva knows there is no within and without, no self and other, no duality. When we cross the bridge from the ultimate into our world of duality, we bring the understanding of non-duality with us. And we live from that place. This brings us freedom from confusion over questions like this, for we're no longer a separate self-entity. We recognize ourselves as part of the fabric of life, which is constantly moving and changing. We know that our ability to be solid and present is the ultimate gift. As wise ones, we can determine which action is appropriate in each situation. Our training in deep listening helps us know when to speak and when to stay silent. In the same way, we are always engaged and active, even when our response is to remain solid and still. This is the contribution of the calm person in the boat that is being blown about by the waves of chaos. Tai reports that having just one calm, centered person in a boat of people filled with fear can make the difference in getting that boat to safety. What greater action could there be than to offer ourselves as that calm person? So sometimes we're working on ourselves to calm our fears and our anger, to see more clearly through the chaos to the truth of love and connection. And sometimes we're doing the same thing through social justice work, helping to create conditions in our society that give everyone an equal opportunity for happiness. Sometimes we're helping a neighbor or a friend to ease their burden a bit or to offer a small moment of delight. Every thought, word, and action that we choose has consequences. Whatever the playing field, whether it be our own mind or our greater community, when we are motivated by bodhicitta, we can offer our clear seeing and open heart, and then we're part of the healing. Being here today is a potent opportunity to deepen our intention to be a helper, to walk our bodhisattva path. And just by being here, we offer this joy to one another. We sit together in stillness and silence. We engage in walking and eating and singing with our full awareness, and we're able to touch the depths of possibility. We connect with our true nature, and it's the easiest thing. It's not a distant land that you need a secret code to find and enter. It's right here in this moment. We're already here. How to save the world? Enjoy this moment completely. Wish for nothing to be different. Rest right here. Experience the joy of being a piece of life as it is, right now. Lao Tzu says, "If you want to awaken all of humanity, then awaken all of yourself. If you want to eliminate the suffering in the world, then eliminate all that is dark and negative in yourself. Truly, the greatest gift you have to give is that of your own self-transformation." And from Krishnamurti, "What you are, the world is. And without your transformation, there can be no transformation of the world." So we make the joyful effort to transform our fears and doubt and pain by making space for all of it. We listen deeply to our own stories of suffering as well as those of others. And in this way, we acknowledge their sacredness. We stand up for those who are disempowered, knowing that the oppressed and the oppressors are both wounded warriors trying to come home. We welcome them all. We do our best to make space in our hearts and in our world for everyone. So the Bodhisattva we will meet and work with next quarter, I think it's on July 18th, will show us a path to do this. A method of loving everyone without exception. And this is a warning for you. This is the most challenging advanced practice I know. It's very hard. And we're up to it. We're up to start this path. So I'd like to end with a quote from Ram Dass. He says, "To look at the universe and see all of the forces, the heavy ones, the light ones, the destructive ones, the creative ones, to find what your part is in it. And if your part is that of the Bodhisattva, that of reducing the suffering of human beings, and that's all your work is, you just do it and do it and do it until there is no you in there. There is merely this instrument for relieving the suffering of all beings."